great to have Rich with us. And he very kindly stepped in and kind of offered to share. We were really excited about this because kind of we're thinking about engaging with community. And kind of in a moment, Tom's going to be focusing on what our community looks like. But we're really aware that kind of Rich has been on a journey since he left us, both Cambridge and then Ealing, which is a totally different community, and now back in Tunbridge Wells in Sherwood. So it just felt like he had kind of a lot of insight to bring in just in kind of how church kind of relates to very different communities and very different kind of groups of peoples in community. So it's just great to have you with us. So thank you for being willing to share. Can I pray for you? Lord, just thank you that this is all about family, and kind of Rich is so much part of our family. And we just thank you for the journey you've taken him on. And Lord, as he just brings insight from that journey, would you speak through him to us, Lord? Amen.
Amen. Good. Well, it is really nice to be with you all. And it's already been a great morning for me because it's my birthday tomorrow. It's always encouraging to be with St. Matthew's. And someone had remembered, which is very sweet of them, and they said, we were trying as a family to work out how old you were. And they said, we think you're 37. Unnecessary laughter from Jill Fuller there. So that has made the last 5 years of my life, if I'm honest. And so that was very good. So anyway, it's good to be with you. And yeah, Chris just asked me to share a little bit about how church maybe can engage with community. I'm going to share a little bit from my time in London, and I'm talking a little bit about St. Philip's. I'm not saying that we have all the what I'm going to share is right or we have all the answers. Hopefully it's just something that will just get you guys to think a little bit about your context as well. I don't know if you've ever sat in church on a Sunday morning and someone's read the passage for the day and you've thought, I wonder how anybody could say anything new about that passage. You know, if someone reads the parable of the lost sheep or the parable of the sower, you think, what can somebody say about that passage that has not already been said? And it's even worse when you're supposed to be preaching on one of those passages. You think, what on earth can I say that hasn't been said before? But the other day I was at a conference with Chris and Carol, and it wasn't just the three of us, there was lots of people there, but they were there. And one of the guys who was speaking, a guy called Chris Vallotton, who's an American pastor, he just made a throwaway comment about the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I've got to say that ever since he said it, it has just not left my mind. And it just sort of has changed the way I speak and the way I think about what we're doing at St. Philip's. It isn't in some ways something that's new. It was just an interesting way of looking at it. And he was talking about the Good Samaritan just very briefly. He talked about the idea, of course, that the Good Samaritan, the story that Jesus tells, it comes out of a question that Jesus has asked about who is my neighbor. And Jesus tells this story. And I guess the big point of the story is, in a way, that your neighbor is the person in front of you. It's whoever the person is in front of you that has need. That is your neighbor. And you're to love your neighbor as yourself. And we all know that, and we've heard the story of the Good Samaritan lots of times in sermons and assemblies and all sorts of different things on the story of the Good Samaritan. But then he said this, and this is the thing that really struck me. He said, at some point, though, somebody needs to ask the question, what are we going to do about the Jericho Road? And I had never, ever heard anybody say that before, nor had I ever thought about it before. At some point, somebody needs to ask the question, what are we going to do about the Jericho Road? Now, you guys know as well as I do that the Jericho Road had a story. It's one of the reasons why Jesus used that road in the parable. It was an essential highway that linked Jerusalem to Jericho. But it was notorious. It was notoriously difficult to travel on. The terrain was really, really difficult to walk along and to move animals along. And of course, it went through a rocky desert. And so you were exposed, you were vulnerable. There was ample places for robbers and muggers and thieves to hide out in the desert. And as you traveled on this road, you were vulnerable. And of course, as Jesus tells the story, you imagine that the people there would have gone, because they would have known the road. They knew the story. And so, of course, in Jesus' story, this guy travels along the Jericho Road and he is mugged on the Jericho Road. And this American guy was saying, surely at some point the question needs to be asked, what shall we do about the Jericho Road? And I guess it just struck me that so often, churches, we're really good at picking up the person on the side of the road. We're really good at that. I mean, I think there were some statistics recently that came out that said if the church stopped its voluntary work within this country, the government would have to find something like £3 or £7 billion or some insane amount of money just to fund what the church is currently doing for free. We're really good at that. But in some ways, the more strategic question is to say, what should we do about the Jericho Road so that actually as people travel along the Jericho Road, they don't keep getting mugged? And that's about changing community. That's about changing society. And that really provoked me. And I guess one of the things I really love about St. Philip's, and I know it's also true of St. Matt's, and I love it about this church, is that St. Philip's has an incredible heart for its community. And it seems to me that one of the things that we have been asking and need to continue asking about our community, about the Sherwood community, is to say, what are the Jericho Roads? And what can we as a church do about them? Or what can we as a church do to work with others to do something about the Jericho Road so that people do not keep getting robbed as they walk along it? So that's my question. In a way, that's the thing that really at the moment provokes me. And I feel really passionate about it. And it's been good at St. Philip's to talk about it. Let me just share a little bit about, I'm really conscious of time. Every conversation I had with Chris and Carol over the last couple of weeks was all about, you've only got 15 minutes. And I put my watch out. I didn't look at what time it was I started. That was a major error on my part. I know it was later than 12 o'clock, Carol, by my watch. Anyway, you better hope it was. Let me talk a little bit about Sherwood. You guys are from Tunbridge Wells. You know something of that community. And so in some ways, what I'm going to share, you will be familiar to you. When I said that I was going to Sherwood, I'll talk about Ealing in a moment, but one of the people in Ealing, I said I'm going to a church in Tunbridge Wells. They said, oh, Tunbridge Wells, it's very posh, isn't it? I said, yeah. I said, actually, I'm going to a part that's actually really quite a deprived community. And they said, deprivation in Tunbridge Wells means you drive an Audi, not a Mercedes. And I said, well, anytime you want to come to Sherwood, you are welcome. But you know something of the community. Another vicar said to me that Sherwood is the part of Tunbridge Wells that the rest of the town has turned its back on. Let me just give you some stories. Let me just give you some statistics. And please just keep... these are not for repeating. I'm not trying to... Are you recording? Okay, fine. Okay, I'll stop one of the... I won't say one of the statistics. That's fine. Is there any way we could not record this little bit? Is that all right? Otherwise, it's hard to sort of talk about it. So sorry. But let me just try and share something. Ealing was a very, very large Anglican church. It was incredibly well-resourced. St. Paul's Ealing is incredibly well-resourced. And if I'm honest, it had a massive reach. People came from all over to come and worship at St. Paul's. So in some ways, the idea of a local community had sort of been diluted a long, long time ago because people would travel for 10, 15 miles across London to come and worship at St. Paul's. The area itself immediately around St. Paul's. So because of that, one of St. Paul's strategies basically was to cast a very wide and very appealing net. It did extremely well, and it did a whole range of different activities, none of which were rocket science in some ways, just standard things that churches could do, and people kind of came and bought into those things. But let me just say a little bit about the immediate community. I would say the immediate community around St. Paul's, I wrote a few words to try and describe it. Firstly, it was incredibly affluent. Most of the houses were like nursery road houses, but you'd have to pay £1 million for them. So not many people could afford one of those houses. It was incredibly aspirational. People had done well in life and to live in Northfields. I'm generalising, but most people. People were very ambitious, and people were very competent and very sociable. So, let me just say a few things about how St. Paul's tried to connect with those people. One of the things maybe was unique to St. Paul's, which I hadn't seen in lots of other churches, was they ran an incredible number of courses. So people, if you were thinking about getting married in, and you lived in Northfields, you wanted your marriage to be great. So you wanted to know, how do I build a good marriage? So they'd go, oh, there's a marriage course, I'll go and do it. People wanted, if they were to have a child, they'd say, I want to know how to raise my child really well, and I'll fit it into my busy life, and I'll go and learn. People wanted to learn about all kinds of things, and the church ran courses for people, and people from the community came. One of the things about that was that people were always looking to improve their lives. They were very aspirational, and they had the get up and go to do it. And so basically, lots of people, particularly the women, recognised that spirituality could be a useful bolt-on to a happy life. And so they were open, very open to spiritual things. So I remember there was a women's day on mindfulness, which was all the rage at the time. It may still be, I don't know. It was absolutely rammed with people from the community. They just wanted to know about this idea of Christian mindfulness, and they came. That people just wanted to learn, they were hungry to do things better, there was just that kind of culture in the community. A lot of the social action sort of projects run from St. Paul's were program-based rather than relationship-based. We had lots of social action stuff that happened, but it was all very well organised, and in some ways, because of that, it was slightly detached from the church. It had a great impact, it changed people's lives, but it wasn't relational in terms of with the church. And I think that was probably one of the great challenges for St. Paul's. It was so big, it was so well resourced, it had such a big reach. How do you keep relationship at the heart of it? It's very difficult to do that when actually most people in the church don't know each other, because you can't. I would say that relationships were the key to anything that was done locally. And it's such an obvious thing to say, but I think it's so true. The community, the community were very lonely. Mother Teresa said the greatest epidemic in the West is the epidemic of loneliness. In London, that's probably more the case than anywhere, because it's so networked rather than local. But the people around our church were very, very competent people. And they were able to make community and socialise. It was just very, very easy for them. And so they did it. They socialised around the local school. They socialised around the local pub, the local sports team, the local tag rugby event, or whatever it might be. They just made their own social lives. But they were always willing to join in with somebody else's. And so the church was just one more opportunity to create community, to be sociable, to meet people, to hang out, to network, whatever it might be. And they valued that. And they weren't afraid to come and to be part of it and just to join in. And so actually, St. Paul's was never going to be the heart of their community, because they were capable of creating community wherever they went. But it was a part of their community. And because of that, there was that connection. But most of the time, local people came to St. Paul's because of local relationships. Book groups, just hanging out on the street with neighbours, barbecues, they were the things that ultimately connected the local community to the local church. And actually for me, I think relationship is the thing that's key to both. In Sherwood, it seems to me that one of the sort of narratives has been the church, and this isn't a reflection on anybody past or any situation at all, but I think there's a sense in Sherwood that the church community are too good for us. And actually that is broken through relationship. We will hang out with you, and we will have you around our home, and we will invite you to our church. That is not true. And in St. Paul's, when people could choose any kind of community they wanted, and with loads of disposable money, and the world was their oyster. I used to think, what is the gospel to somebody who has everything? they'd come because you were their friend. And that was the bottom line. So I will stop there. I've gone over, hopefully not by too much, but I hope that's in some way provoking, if not helpful.
Rich, thank you very much. We just show our appreciation. Thank you. Again, just take a moment for a stretch. Tom, do you want to come down and get yourselves? We just told Tom he's only got 10 minutes, which is going to be challenging for him. And I just really want to make a link, because this word community we've been using actually has its problems. We've already seen it a little bit in that kind of when we talk about community, do we mean kind of community within the church, which is what we were thinking in the last session, or do we mean community that's out there? And now we are thinking very much of that community that's out there. But there's another way that community can be complex, and I think it came out of what Rich was saying. That kind of St. Matt's physical church building where we worship is in one community. And some of us live in that community too. But actually lots of us live in other places and work in other places and spend our free time in other places. So although we're using the word community of church and what's around us, kind of actually that may not be the community where we spend our time. So kind of we need to be kind of trying to look at this issue without blinkers, but we did think it was really important to spend some time making sense of the community that St. Matt's is placed in, and that's what Tom's going to be doing for us now, helping us kind of unpack the nature of our community so we can make sense of how we connect with it. Tom, over to you.
Thank you. So I did once cut a 5-minute talk at uni down to 1 minute, so I might be able to cut this in half. We'll see. So, as Chris said, I've been looking at, over the last month or so, what our community is. And so I've done sort of a community survey, as it were, of High Brooms. And so a community survey is basically looking at the statistics and the makeup of an area and then seeing how that can then be applied. So I've done everything other than the how can that be applied, because that's what we're all going to do later. So my first slide shows our... Can you see the green line? Yeah? Yeah, good. Okay, so the green line are the parish boundaries in our area. So our community, as good Anglicans, is our parish. And so you can see the star is where St. Matt's is. We are that large area that covers most of High Brooms. And then we're sort of surrounded by St. Luke's down to the bottom, and St. Thomas, I think, is the one up north. So we've got our parish. Then the next slide shows us these purple lines are the wards that we are part of. And so, as you can see, our parish covers two wards. It covers Southborough and High Brooms and St. John's. And so the vicarage is actually in St. John's ward, not High Brooms ward. Which is a little bit odd. So if you live on Southview Road, half of you are in High Brooms and half are in St. John's, which is really confusing for everyone. And then it gets even more confusing because you've got these fantastic lines, which are LSOAs, which the next slide defines LSOAs. They are areas made up of around 1,000 people. The minimum 1,000, and then on average across the whole of the country, they are about 1,500. And so ours are, there's four that sort of cover our area. There are six technically that cover our parish, but there are four that are majority in our parish. Three definitely. The bottom one there actually goes like halfway up Upper Grosvenor Road for some reason, quite randomly. So because they're really confusing names to remember, I've colour-coded them. So there we go, and given them names. So Barnett's Wood is orange. So that's the one to the top that covers most of Barnett's Wood. Broke's Way and High Brooms is red. That sort of covers coming up the hill. The church is in that one. And then it goes sort of up and through to Broke's Way. Cunningham and Cambrian is in St. John's Ward, not in High Brooms Ward. That's the one that's dark blue. And then Yewtree is sort of Yewtree Road and the other side of Powder Mill Lane and all of those roads coming off of there. And that's going to be purple. So with the statistics that I've got, I've tried to be as up to date and specific as possible. And so I'm mainly looking at these local areas. But for some of them, I've had to look at the ward because the statistics just aren't available. So first off, population of our area is about 6,500 people live in those four areas. And as you can see, like, all of them are above 1,500, which is the average. So we're quite densely populated as an area. This set of data was fantastic because it gave me a number of people for every age from 0 to 90. So what I've done with this graph is adjusted it by 2 years because it was data from 2016. So this is sort of current, except no one under 2 is included. And so what you can see from that is that actually we've got a massive population that are of working age. And so there are 66% of people in our area are between 19 and 69. So there's two-thirds of people that are in our area are between 19 and 69. And 24% are under 18. So there isn't a massive elderly community where we are, but there is a massive working age population. And so my next question was, what do these people do? And so the most recent data here is 2011. And so what you can see from that is quite clearly the majority of people are employed full time. So 40% of people-ish are working full time for an employer. And the next highest is retired people, which is 15%. So we don't have a huge older population, but we do have a significant number of retired people, which is quite interesting. And so unemployment is about 5%, or at least it was in 2011. I don't know what it would be now. So we've got this community that's mainly of working age, and they tend to be working full-time as well. So how do we then work with them? So next I looked at education, and this shocked me slightly. And so to make this slightly clearer, because you've got no qualifications, and then level 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I had to look up what they meant. So a level 1 qualification is GCSE grades G to D. A level 2 is GCSE grades C to A. Level 3 are A levels and AS levels. Level 4 is certificates of higher education and higher national certificates. And then above that, you've got degrees, foundation degrees, masters, and things like that. And so most of the people in our area have got level 4 or above qualifications. Well, the highest proportion have, but 20% of our community have no qualifications. And this looks at everyone over the age of 16 in our community. And so it's 20% have no qualifications, and 33% have got GCSEs as their highest qualification. So that's something for us to take into account. Next, I looked at the English Index of Multiple Deprivation, which is a fantastic title. And so this is a snippet of the government infographic, that's the word, which is nice and colourful. And so basically it takes all of the LSOAs in England and ranks them between 1 and 32,844. And so they look at these 7 domains of deprivation. I don't know if you can see it. It's fairly light. So they look at income and employment, and they make up 50%. No, they don't. They make up 45%. My maths is awful. They make up 45% of the number. Then education, health, crime, barriers to housing and services, and living environment. They also provide 2 supplementary indexes, which I'll talk about in a bit. And so if we look at these, I didn't put together quite as colourful a chart, but I have put together a chart. And oh, there are the colours. Remember the colours if there's a particular area that you're interested in. So go back one. There we go. So Barnetswood is orange, Brokesway and Highbrooms are red, Cunningham Cambrian dark blue, and Ewtree is purple. So if we go to the top one there is the IMD rank. So that is the overall rank given to the area. And so as you can see, sort of the Barnetswood area is it's in the fourth decile. So it's in the 40% most deprived areas in England. And then we've got two that are sort of around 50%. And then Yew Tree is right up at the top there. But then, so the things I wanted to point out from this one are the income deprivation and the employment rank. And so income deprivation, Barnett's Wood is in the 30% most, like the bottom 30% in England. And for education and skills, it's, yeah, sorry, not employment, education and skills. For employment, it's in the bottom 20%. For education and skills, it's in the bottom 20%. Yes, that's what I said. Yeah. And so when we've got a community that is mainly working, but they've got low education and skills, how do we speak to them? The next slide has got three more indicators. It's quite interesting. Living environment rank is an interesting one because it puts Barnett's Wood quite highly, whereas on all of the rest, it's one of the lower, it's the bottom or near that end. And this is down to the way that it's scored. And so living environment rank is done on whether or not your house has had a new kitchen within 30 years, has got central heating, and how many road traffic accidents occur outside it. So Barnett's Wood scores really highly because it's a fairly new estate. The majority of the houses are council-owned, and so they get their kitchens up and bathrooms updated periodically, and it's nowhere near a main road. And so the air quality is good. There isn't lots of traffic going past, and so it scores really highly there. The main thing on this slide is the income deprivation affecting children and the income deprivation affecting older people. And so in both of those, we score really lowly, really low as an area. And so Barnett's Wood, we see down the end there, in both in the bottom 30%. But then also Cunningham and Cambrian, for both of them, is in the bottom 40%. And behind that, on the one affecting children, you've got Brokes Way and High Brooms, which was a little bit shocking to me, at least. And so how do we deal with that? So the final few slides are looking at the ward rather than the local areas that we have been looking at, because they're not available. So what the first thing I want to look at is children living in poverty. And so these are the most recent statistics that I found from an organisation called End Child Poverty. And so in our ward, child poverty is 12.64% before housing costs, but after housing costs, it rises to 20%, which seems absolutely shocking. It's much higher than the Tunbridge Wells rate, which is 16.4%, but it's actually lower than the national rate of child poverty, which is at 27%, which I just can't quite fathom that 27% of our children in our country are living in poverty. Poverty is... Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense. But it does seem to follow from what the IMD was saying. So what do we do there as a church? And finally, how am I doing? Have I gone over? Not quite. No, I'm good. Cool. Finally, I'm getting there. This was quite interesting. So this is a set of data called a mosaic profile, and this was put together by Experian, and each of us have been categorized into one of these 15 categories, and behind them 61 subcategories. So have a look and see which one you would like to be in. My favorite name for one is Vintage Value. It's not a particularly nice category to be in, but it does sound like a record store. So I've read through some of the information that's a bit more detailed than just what this says, and I think I fall into the aspiring homemakers category, which is category H. And so they have provided this on a ward-by-ward basis across the country. So the next slide shows our scores for Southburn, High Brooms, Tunbridge Wells and KCC. So the ones that are highlighted there are the two highest percentages. And actually, they really stand out amongst both Tunbridge Wells and KCC as just being ridiculously high. No, none of if you look at Tunbridge Wells and the KCC one, none of them are as high as those two. So the next slide shows us the top five in Southburn High Brooms and their definitions again. So actually, we've got 38% of people are younger households settling down in houses placed within their means, aspiring homemakers, and 18% are family basics. And so if you look at the more detailed explanations of what they are, aspiring homemakers are typically younger families and couples who are yet to have children, but they've got a large disposable income. And the family basics are families that are seeing strains on their budget due to limited opportunities, low income, and the cost of raising children. And so these two categories make up 56% of the people in our area. And so if we've got so many neighbours in these two massively different demographics, how do we reach them both? And so that's where I'm going to leave it. There's some questions, I think, next.